Gary Parrish. Welcome back. CBS Sports, I Own College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, honor Brandon Davies. Smash that like button. If you haven't yet subscribed to the I Own College Basketball Podcast, please do that wherever you listen to podcasts like Apple and Spotify. Let's get into it, and let's start with some off-season injury news. Yuck. Syracuse transfer Donnie Freeman, he has suffered a torn Achilles. He was expected to start for St. John's next season. Now he's out for the year. Not ideal. Norlander, good to see you. Your thoughts on this not-so-great development?
It's not a good development. Freeman not among the most notable transfers, but I think objectively speaking across the board, a top 25 transfer. He was 16th at our site at CBS Sports. Would have been an impact player significantly. This blows. He's not the only one. There's another player. And now, of course, I'm blanking in real time, GP. You get these offseason workouts, and the last thing you want to see is an update from a school with a three-sentence statement from a coach about a player being out for the year. It's brutal. Rick Pitino, in particular, has had a really rough go of it. We'll get to more of that at the end of the show. St. John's didn't have a top 10 portal class, but it had done plenty well for itself. And obviously, consider to be, right there again with UConn going into next season, the Big East, now you lose him. There's actually some weird tentacles attached to this in general. Like, I don't know if St. John's is or will be able to get anyone else to replace him on that level. We'll get to the Michigan stuff in just a little bit here, but, they keep having one player after another publicly recommit to the program for next season, which is great. But that portal will technically open for them, and I know St. John's will have to at least do its diligence, be it there or elsewhere, by getting another player on the roster. So losing Freeman is a stinger. Just a quick refresher. I played at Syracuse, 6'9", 205, 210-pound forward, 16.5 points, more than 7 rebounds last season. Really did make a nice year one to year two jump. And just to me, he would have been, at least I would have expected him to be, even like, I don't know, maybe a notch above what Bryce Hopkins was a season ago, I think. And credit to Bryce Hopkins, by the way. Dude got drafted. Good on him. But they lose him here. So this does ding St. John's. It does ding the outlook. GP, I don't believe you've updated the top 25 and one. I assume you will, sure, because this is a significant piece. We never like talking about injuries, period. You never want to be the lead topic on an offseason podcast when one of your starters gets injured and is done for the year, but that is the case in Queens.
Yeah, it stinks. Whether you're a St. John's fan or part of that staff, you not only spend time as far as the staff, like working to get this deal done, recruiting, making sure the money's right, all of that stuff. But then you start imagining what it's going to look like and playing around with combinations, and then boom, it's just like off season. Now that's over. And one of the biggest additions to a program that I had 11th in the top 25 and one is now not going to be in uniform all season. I haven't updated yet. I will this afternoon. I was actually going to ask you.
Yeah.
I had him 11. Where do you think you slot him now?
Yeah, let me do this in real time for you, buddy, here. I'm going to bring this up and I'm going to talk through it. You had him 11. If you would have had me guess, I would have said you would have had the Johnny somewhere like 13, 14. So we were in the same general vicinity there. I think without Freeman and without a replacement at this point, from a roster standpoint, it's tough to justify St. John's as top 15 purely in the offseason. Not to say that, Rick Pitino is an amazing coach. He can get there. I know that he can do that, but I don't know if I could go top 15 right now, GP. All right, let's see who you've got here. Your most recent update was June 16th. It actually wasn't that long ago when you got Ohio State, got LJ Smith. So he's got Arkansas 12, Iowa State 13, Houston 14, Louisville 15. I would definitely have St. John's. You have Tennessee 16. I would have them below Tennessee. You have Kentucky 17. The interesting thing about that is that Kentucky thought it was getting Freeman and it did not. And then he went to St. John's. I would have, man, GP, it's just wild to think about how it is now versus like 10 years ago. Just the way that these outlooks on these teams change by the middle of the offseason versus what they were, you know, halfway through April. Kentucky has just taken one hell of a journey to this point. I think I would have Kentucky ahead of St. John's. I think you're higher on USC than I am. You have USC 18. I will not have USC in my top 20 going into the season. I know that. Then you've got Bama 19, Purdue 20. I'd say, this is just my, do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, all right.
Rankings, of course. I would say best case 17, and I don't think you can drop them worse in the offseason than, like, you've got Indiana 22. They've got Marcus Burton coming in, Bryce Lindsey, Aiden Sherrill, Darren Harris, who didn't play much at Duke. I would have still Saints. So, yeah, 18 to 22. That's where I think that's where I think you will have them land.
I had it 15 to 17 in that range. Definitely behind Arkansas, Iowa State, Houston, Louisville. And then I started looking at it. But I will either have them 15 just ahead of Tennessee, or 16 just ahead of Kentucky, or 17 just ahead of USC. And I think that's probably it. 17 behind Tennessee, Kentucky, but ahead of USC. I think that's probably the sweet spot.
Yeah, I love that Tennessee roster. Almost enough. We'll see where I land on him in the fall. That's another show for another time. But I think that Tennessee roster has a chance to be like borderline top 10 good. So yeah, with them losing, we wait to see if they can get another player. I want to say, I'm kind of going off the cuff here. I want to say there might be. Don't aggregate this, St. John's people. They might be looking into another international player. There might be another international player that might be. There's a couple of these players right now at a few different programs where I think the players, in some cases, maybe they've publicly committed, in some cases it's private, but they're going through the process and they're kind of hitting some resistance there. Like, there's another program. I was talking to its coach last month. This is a program in your preseason top 25 rankings. I just won't say the school because it was technically off record. But this player is an international player that has committed to the school. And the coach told me he's like for sure a starter on our team if he gets cleared. But he hasn't been cleared yet. So I think there's just a little bit here and a little bit there with some of these schools. And I want to say maybe the Johnnies are one of them. Regardless, you know, they got to see if they can get someone else into the mix there, because losing Freeman, he wasn't expected to be the best player, but that is a ding all the same.
Yeah. Sometimes you get to this part of the calendar and you'll hear things like, well, that school's out of money, or that staff's out of money, or right, they don't have money for that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just not going to be a thing at St. John's. Like, they're never out of money. Like, so if they need, like, if they decide there's a player out there available that can help them, it doesn't matter whether it's July 2nd, August 2nd, yeah, September 2nd. It doesn't matter how much they've spent. It doesn't matter that they invested, I'm assuming, millions in Donnie Freeman and now not going to get to have him, at least not next season. They still got a billionaire they can go to. So if they want to enhance the roster and there's actually a way to do it, like that person exists, they'll be involved if they want to be involved, because they'll have the money to do it.
That's generally speaking, that is my same understanding. There was some point, like not last season, maybe the season before, we said something about St. John's on the show. And then I got a call and it was just kind of like, hey, just so you know, like, we're not the richest school. We don't have the the absolute most money. Like, there is a limit, you know. So I agree with you. And especially when
how about this? Do you believe this to be true?
Mike Rapoli is not going to say no, especially after losing a starting player.
That's what I mean. Yes. I mean, if Rick Pitino and his staff identify a player who can help, they will have the money, no matter, almost regardless of what it would cost, they'll have the money available to try to make it happen. That's what I believe to be true.
Well, you know, it's interesting on that note. I'll just shoehorn this in here real quick. There's this case that's going on for the 5-5 has been approved. It's not fully ratified yet. And obviously that's going to be fought 5 years to play five seasons of college. But the change, because typically it was four to play five. In exchange for that, if you get injured, then you lose the year. You don't get it back. There are no medical red shirts. The only exceptions are if you go on a Mormon mission, pregnancy. There's a few things that there's obviously a military service. There are exceptions, but that they're like hardline exceptions. And now, obviously, that's being fought because the college players that just finished this past season, they're not eligible to get their bonus fifth year. It activates this year. There is no grandfathering. So as expected, there are lawsuits. We'll see what happens with that, with those lawsuits. But The first one was filed in the state of Ohio on behalf of 15 players, none of whom most people on this podcast have ever heard of. But as part of this, Richard Pitino had to testify on this yesterday. And when he did that, he initially, this is per local story here from Cincinnati.com, he resisted, and then he was reminded that during this deposition, this was not in a courtroom as far as I understand it, that he was under oath. And so he had to, for the record, for the purposes of this this lawsuit, admitted that Xavier, I'm going to trivia time the audience if they don't know this. Trivia time, okay, those playing along at home. What number do you think Xavier is spending on his roster this season? Think about it. Give it another 3-4 seconds. Come to a number. Xavier basketball, Big East program. What number do you think it is? All right, here's the answer in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 14 million.
Woohoo!
14 million at Xavier. So that just gives you a real sense.
Zip them up.
And this is after they got to 5.5 million a year ago. Zip them up, bust them out, whatever.
Zip them up. Shouts to Two Holloway.
That is some zip them up money if I've ever heard.
Two Holloway came along at the wrong time, buddy. He'd have got 2.5 million. He'd have got 2.5 million, no problem. Zip them up. Yep.
And by the way, good for Xavier. That is more. I knew Xavier was above 10. I never would have thought I actually got to 14. And just to invoke that with what we're talking about here, if Xavier has 14, you best believe St. John's can comfortably beat that number. So that's just the space that we're at right now. And I don't even know how much. Maybe I hope Donnie Freeman gets all the money. If he can, great. If not, this is also part of the process that really, you know. It's just this. That's just the entire state of play. It is incredible. I don't know if he's going to get paid all, some, a little. If he stays with the program, comes back a year, probably gets all of it. But these are the contingency plans that you need to plan around without a doubt. So an unwanted headline here as we get rolling at the start of July.
All right, let's take a break, and then when we come back, let's turn our attention to Michigan, the reigning champs. It's been mostly quiet in Ann Arbor a week after Dusty May left for the NBA. So what's going on? I'll ask Norlander next. First word partners. All right, Norlander, as you know, day before the first night of the NBA draft, Dusty May left Michigan for the Dallas Mavericks. He's holding a press conference in Dallas right now.
Is
Mike
he?
Boynton, I just saw it come across Twitter.
Okay. If he is, I was told he is not in the state of Texas today. So
Okay. Hold on.
Maybe he is. I was told he is recruiting a certain person to be on his new Maverick staff, and he is not in the state of Texas. So we'll see. Anyway, okay. Continue. Sorry to throw you off course. That just threw me for a loop.
Somebody just tweeted a video of Dusty May talking at what looks like a press conference, but I guess it could be anywhere in the world. Okay. It also could have taken place at any point.
I believe his introductory presser was on Monday.
Okay. Maybe that's it. Hey, it ain't my job to keep up with what Dusty May's doing every day of his life anymore.
It's not your job to inform the public. We know that. Yes.
It is not my job to know what Dusty May's doing every day of his life. All right. If Dusty May wanted me to know what he's doing every day of his life, he could have just stayed in college. All right.
That's correct.
But he picked. He decided he'd rather have Brian Windhorst know what he's doing every day instead of me and you. So that's fine. He made his choice. All right.
Yep.
He's Windhorst's problem now.
Why would he do that? Now, why would he do that? All right, what else we got here?
Windhorst is so good. I love him. He's so good.
He's terrific.
He's terrific. He's awesome. Okay, Dusty May leaves for Dallas. Picked Wendy over me and you. Not to mention John Fanta and Mike Boynton promoted to interim.
Yep.
And then it was like, and now the players can go wherever they want to go, and then it's mostly just been quiet. Why is it so quiet? What's going on?
Yeah, all transparency. I definitely thought we would have fired up the pod machine by Tuesday late afternoon at the latest to lead, not on St. John's having a season-ending injury to one of its projected starters, but on Mike Boynton being promoted to the full-time head coach. That is still not the case.
Full transparency. That was actually the plan.
That was the plan. And then we got to Wednesday night, and I was like, we're going to go. It wasn't just me. We all agreed. And we're going Thursday. We're done.
Thursday, we're talking about
Ward Manuel's timeline. Okay.
Thursday. Hey, Dusty May can leave us if he wants to, but that does not mean we have to be a slave to Ward Manuel's timeline. All right. So we decided Thursday at 1 o'clock Eastern, we are talking about something. All right. So here
Josh,
we are.
Josh sometimes sends us funny texts in our little text thread. These should go in the chat. He goes, Mike Boynton's been dominating my life. It's hilarious to me, the idea that Mike Boynton, whose life has been dominated by the decisions of a bunch of players and their parents and their agents, he's just been at the forefront right here, right at the top of Josh's mind for like 4 days in a row. It is true, though. Sometimes we quite literally have to plan our jobs around the decisions of other people that are time zones away or hundreds of miles away. The Ward Manuel and Mike Boynton have had multiple meetings. They have not yet obviously come to terms. There are negotiations at play. Keep in mind, Mike Boynton is still being paid by Oklahoma State for 2 more years. It's millions of dollars. And so I'm not going to say he is operating from a position of strength, because obviously he's not. But at the same time, he's got money coming to him regardless. And they need to determine how many, like, in my opinion, I think the sides should come together, 2-year guaranteed deal for, you know, $2.5 million per year, something like that. And then see where we're at the end of the season and go from there. I've been told there's no coaching search happening. There's not anyone, you know, that might be waiting in the wings. It's Boynton, and will it be the interim? Will it not? You've had all these players. At first it was Elliot Cadeau, then it was Trey McKinney, then it was Mustafa Chom. JP Estrella earlier today on Thursday publicly committed to the program. I was told he intended to actually make that announcement after Boynton's deal got done. And similar to this podcast, JP Estrella said, you know what? I'm not waiting around anymore. I'm just going to get it done and get it out there. So he did it. We wait on Brandon McCoy, but it sounds like Boynton has done, and that staff have done a hell of a job at just rallying to keep everyone there. Everyone's on campus with the exception of Elliot Cadeau, who's actually, he's playing overseas starting next week, I believe. The portal has not technically opened for them. So how this works is Dusty goes to Dallas, then there's an interim. There's a 30-day period after Dusty leaves and any coach where if there's not a full-time coach in place, then the portal opens for everyone. So at the absolute latest, it will be later this month in the final week of July that the portal will open. But if/when Boynton gets the head job, then 5 days after that, there will be a 15-day period where the portal will then open. And then that's when it really gets real, so to speak. And we wait and see if they can keep the entire roster together. So Boynton could have the job 5 hours from now. I was told probably not to expect something today, but not impossible. Maybe tomorrow. If not, it drags on in the next week. And you've got two sides trying to figure out what's best for everyone that makes the most sense. Michigan is in the position of having a coach come revive a program, win a national championship, and then immediately go to the highest level of the sport. Harbaugh did it with the NFL. Dusty has now done it with the NBA. And because the Sharon Moore stuff went completely sideways, it's not fair. I would argue it's extremely not right. But from what I'm hearing, just the Board of Trustees side with Michigan, they are just going to try and protect themselves as much as they can from not having another, not even like Mike's a total stand-up guy, but having another situation where, okay, you promoted someone in-house after the coach that won the whole thing left, and we don't want to have a situation where Michigan's just, you know, we look up in a year and it's like, why did we do this? So there's a lot attached to all this.
I get that. I just, like, that's shitty. Like,
it's extremely shitty. It's very unfair. They're two different human beings.
They're two different
it
people.
It shouldn't be the case. It should not be the case. But as multiple people have told me, like, it's just going to be part of the calculation. It's just, it's in the air around that university. Not to say that, cause Sharon and Mike are two totally different human beings and they should be regarded as such. It is the circumstances under which Sharon got the job.
Sure.
And now the circumstances under which Mike has it. Mike Boynton's like literally one of the most respected coaches in the entire industry and is eager for the opportunity, but they're just trying to figure out what terms work for best of them. But yes, it's entirely apologies for the, for the Curse Ridge, if there's any kiddos listening out of school season here. But it's entirely shitty and should not be part of the calculation here. But quite clearly, it has factored into the negotiating process over the past week plus.
I understand why people's minds go there. Like, I'm not an idiot. Like, right. I understand how your mind would drift in that direction. But ultimately, Michigan should be making a decision about Mike Boynton, and it should have little to do with anybody else who ever worked on that campus.
I completely agree.
Yeah, and I hope another man's sins, for lack of a better word, don't negatively impact whatever might be in front of Mike Boynton, because that would obviously, I think, be unfair. Yeah. So what you're telling me is that, we'll see, but barring a surprise or some sort of breakdown in negotiations, Mike Boynton is going to be the next full-time head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. Yeah. And it just sort of, I think there's something in there for everybody, man. I just started Googling the other night because remember, we thought we were doing this 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So I've had all this. I've had plenty of time to think about it. And so about roughly 40% of Americans at some point in their life get fired or get laid off. That's the estimate.
That's lower than I would have expected.
It was lower than I thought too, but that was the number.
That feels inaccurate. In fact, you said you Googled it. I don't even know if that's trustworthy anymore, but go ahead.
The Google returns that about 40% of Americans are either laid off or fired at some point in their lives. And I imagine on that day, it must feel like you're lost, you're confused, you don't know what's next, you're unsure, you're scared, all sorts of emotions. Fortunately, I have never experienced that. Fingers crossed. But I imagine it's terrifying. I've had friends go through it. We both had, in this industry, buddy, you're lucky if you don't go through it. Right. And I bet you, no matter what industry you work in, that day's a hard day. And people wrap their arms around you and they tell you, man, this ain't the end. But I bet it's hard not to think that it might be on some level. And yet, there are so many stories where you look up and, man, you couldn't have anticipated it, but look around. Not only are you okay, you're better off than you were.
Crazy. I know.
It is crazy. You cannot reasonably expect to become a first-time Division I head coach, get fired, and then 2 years later be the head coach of the reigning national champions. It's outrageous. Happy for him. Like, thrilled for him. It's
without
awesome.
A doubt. I mean, it's what makes this, and I'm kind of gleaning off of a couple of different conversations with a couple of different sources over the past few days, but yeah, he is inheriting one of the for sure top 15 jobs in the sport, and I think if you really wanted to try and make the case for a top 10, I think Michigan's pretty damn close overall, considering the state of everything here. But and as just an aside, and I'm what I'm about to say is not, this stuff has been passed along to me over the years and not anything I've been told basically since Dusty left. The University of Michigan's just general operation as an athletic department is not the most well-greased operation, which isn't to say it's an absolute disaster. Obviously, it's had to go through a serious investigation tied to all the football stuff. But I have had different people over the years kind of say, like, actually the way school A works versus the way school B works versus the way school C works. And this is not just unique to Michigan. It's just, you'd be surprised that sometimes it's kind of like with the Lakers. If from the outside looking in, people might not realize that although the Lakers have arguably the most glamorous brand in all of the NBA, it was basically, until recent ownership change, it was a mom and pop shop for a very, very, like, they had the smallest scouting department in the entire league. And you just wouldn't think that's the way that it would be, but that's just how it is because of how great the late Dr. Buss was in building up that franchise. And so every so often you get little glimpses into, like, actually here's why things, sometimes aren't. The one thing that I can't share with you is, when Dusty, I guess year one, year two, there are just certain, at Michigan, it's football and then it's everyone else. It's very, very, very football dominated, which obviously makes sense considering the great history there. But although it has changed since Dusty was hired there, in many respects in the day-to-day and the week-to-week of how the men's basketball program was regarded and treated and handled, there wasn't much difference with most other non-football sports there, whereas you could go to any variety of schools that have football as the primary one, and you walk the halls there, you get to know the culture there, and no, it's men's basketball is appropriately treated like this. That has since changed because of Dusty at Michigan, but it's a little bit more of insight as to why this is taking so long with the Board of Trustees, with Ward Manuel, who I don't think is making solely. I think if Ward Manuel was making this decision all on his own, we would have already podcasted about Mike Boynton having signed a 2 or 3 year guaranteed deal or whatever to be the coach. That hasn't happened because I don't think it's all Ward's decision, and that's where we're at right now.
It just seems like it's an easy thing to do at Michigan because, I mean, yeah, they can keep the interim tag on him if they want, and that's fine. Like, I'm not going to protest if they do. That's what certain schools would do under similar circumstances. But it just leads to a situation where he's going to get asked about it a lot throughout the season. It's going to be a thing that just sort of hangs above. It's going to impact recruiting and not in a good way. Whereas you can just avoid all that. Like you said, give him a 2 or 3 year contract, guarantee it. He can tell recruits, Michigan's
that's
coach.
That's also part of this.
Oh, of course. Let's say it's a disaster, all right, or just it doesn't work because sometimes these things don't work, whatever. All right, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? You just pay money to make it go away, and they got all of the money.
They got $5 million from the Mavericks to begin with. Okay, that's how the Mavericks had to have to pay Michigan $5 million to get Dusty, who's making, you know, $8 plus million now with his new job, and great for him. And the deal that you're the buyout on Boynton won't be that much money to begin with. Period. And by the way, like the other part of this is, you know, Boynton and that staff have kept this roster together, and they believe that if/when Boynton gets the full-time job, like, they believe they're going to keep everyone. And that in and of itself is pretty critical. Because, oh, by the way, like, no, we don't know what it will look like when Mike's running it versus when Dusty was running it. But I think the most critical output of Michigan with a new head coach and the roster stays the same, the most critical is dropping them from, like, preseason 3 to preseason 14. Like, the most cynical viewpoint you could have, because they're going to still have all the players there. And, you know, Boynton was Dusty's number one assistant for the past 2 years when they won, you know, 68 combined games in the national championship or whatever. So, if he's not the coach, if they can't get this done, I don't think their roster stays together. So that's also a factor in all of this. Like, they have rallied. And if they can't get something done here soon, I think it becomes something of a vulnerability from that roster. So that's the pressing side of it.
And that's why it will get done at some point, because it's in everybody's best interest. Yeah. Like, literally, it's everybody's best interest just to get this done. And you can make him the full-time coach so that he can say he's the full-time coach so that you never have to have the interim conversation again. Yeah. And you know, make the buyout manageable, you know, so you can get at. We do this all the time in coaching contracts. It's like, so-and-so got an extension. And it's like, yeah, but it's not really an extension.
And by the way, some of those extensions were agreed upon the day they agreed to the job, because it basically says if you make the tournament, you automatically get a 1 year extension. This stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, it's like, and he got 3 years added to his contract. The buyout didn't change, though. Right. Okay, then it's not really an extension. It's just, it's a press release. But for all intents and purposes, it doesn't do what they are trying to tell you it does. And you just do the same thing here. What the most important thing for Michigan right now is to keep this roster in place and have Mike be able to say, this is my program. And then if you want to take it back from him in a year or two or three because it should have never been his program, then that's fine. It'll cost you some buyout money. You're rich. You've got buyout money. The alternative to that, so really the only cost is money. The alternative is you can't reach a deal. He's the interim. You start losing the roster. That hangs over, and now you just messed up something that could have been good. For what? For money? You shouldn't let money stand in the way of this.
I agree.
That's why it won't. They'll get it done.
Last thing we can move on. Oh, actually, two things. We got a poll result here. Josh sent me. I'll mention that as well. Just from what I've been told, like, it's just going through a normal negotiation process. This isn't contentious. It's just one side wanting one thing, the other side wanting the other, and trying to get there and get there with terms. And it's really hasn't been that long. It's been 10 days since Dusty left the program. So all things considered, it's not taking too long, but we just expected it to be sooner. Go ahead, GP. What do you got?
I just, before we get out of here, because this has not popped into my head, but as you were talking, I think it needs to. I'm updating the top 25-1 today because of St. John's. I have not updated since Dusty May left. That should factor into it the same way.
Does. I think that's fair. Like,
it has to.
Dusty's
with all
gone.
Due respect to Mike, it has to factor
it has
into
to,
it.
Yeah, and it has to. Where you want to drop them, I don't know. Yeah. But they should drop because the guy who ran the program and previously went to a Final Four with Florida frickin' Atlantic is no longer there. Right. That's definitely a part of it. Josh did put up a poll. How many years will Boynton be the coach at Michigan? 1 year is the most popular, and that's no surprise. 38%, 2 years, 29%, 24%, and then 4 years or longer, 12%. That's actually not that's not such a bad spread overall. So we'll see. We're talking about it now because this could happen tomorrow, and if it does, we're not firing up the pod machine. If and when he gets hired and we next need to update, we'll touch on the particulars there, but just wanted to give you the latest on that end. And the only like other like seriously big time player that they're waiting for a public commitment from is Brandon McCoy, the five-star incoming freshman, who McCoy, Cadeau, McKinney, to me, that's one of the five best backcourts in the country next season. So he may announce between now and our next podcast, and hopefully, you know, before long, Michigan's got a full-time coach and they can turn the page there.
All right, let's move on. The NBA Cup Championship game no longer going to be held in Las Vegas. They're moving it to a college campus in Indianapolis at Butler. They're going to play it inside Hinkle. Cool deal for the Big East school, Norlander. Are you on board with this, or are you offended that the NBA is going to a historic college venue?
I'll tell you what I think about it after the break.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's go. I sure do love land, man.
Okay, good stuff. Good to hear it. Started the Day of the Jackal a couple nights ago. It's on Peacock. Solid so far. So far, we'll see.
So somebody told me a new one. I gotta watch. It's on Apple TV. Do you know what it's called?
No, but the one I'm doing two shows right now. We don't have to go. I just started For All Mankind. It's like space race stuff.
I watched like the first two episodes of that, and then I just got. I think I got.
That's all right so far. It's all right so far. Anyway, think of that show. Feel free to invoke it.
Widow's Bay.
Oh yeah, no, that's on the list. But that's like I'm like 10 shows to get into that. Apparently, very very good. I will probably watch that right before season two starts. So, okay. Heard very good things though. Okay, so NBA Cup going to Hinkle, not Cameron Indoor, which was kind of considered maybe a little bit of a favorite. The NBA announced last year that it was going to seek to put its championship for the Cup into a college venue, and it has done it. And this is awesome. It came out, I believe, yesterday. If not, it was Tuesday. What is time really in the off season? And as someone who was able to cover, I've covered regular games there, and then the NCAA tournament in the bubble year of 21, the COVID bubble, played a number of games at Hinkle Fieldhouse. And although attendance was obviously, it wasn't a full house, but there was plenty in there. It was really like, I'll always remember getting to cover the tournament at Hinkle. I wish that it was able to be done, you know, regularly there. And in part, it's not because there's certain specifications when it comes to normal NCAA tournament venues in normal years, you know, for first and second round stuff that Hinkle can't quite meet from a spec standpoint. But at the NBA, it is good enough. And I love to see this. And you imagine that, hey, first of all, starting with Hinkle is just the right move. All the history attached to it in the state of Indiana. And it's just an incredible barn. As I mentioned on a recent podcast, you watch more NBA than I do by virtue of working for the Grizzlies and doing your daily radio show in Memphis. And I don't watch a ton of NBA typically during the college basketball season because there's so much college basketball to watch and write about and talk about. So I might get a little bit here and there, just like a dashing. It will be really cool to see whatever teams are playing. As long as they don't make the court stupid, don't desecrate that church, please, NBA. I'm just thinking of this now. Do not put some stupid-ass court with six different colors and a gigantic NBA Cup quasi-trophy graphic on the hardwood. No! Let's play it clean, please. It will be an awesome...
Zero chance. It's going to be a stupid-ass court.
Oh, God.
It's going to be a stupid-ass court.
There's so much time for them not to mess this up. It's July. This thing doesn't get played till December. You don't have to mess it up. I love that they're doing this, though. They played in Vegas the past couple of years, and I get why they did that. That's fine. But if they're going to take this initiative, then maybe it'll be Fog Allen in year two or Cameron in year three or who knows, wherever it may move to. There's, you know, there's a good 8-10 awesome college venue. So, I love to see it, and I was actually a little surprised they actually went through with it.
This is a move in the right direction. I understand the idea behind developing the NBA Cup. You want an in-season event. You want to try to make it pop and be bigger and people care. I got that. Makes sense. I understand the idea behind taking it initially, the semifinals and championship, to Las Vegas, because it's a NBA market we're probably going to next. You know, they're going to have a franchise there. And it's Las Vegas. They got an amazing arena, and everybody loves to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
And all of that's true. I totally get how you end up making that decision. Where they had a blind spot is, yes, everybody does like to go to Vegas. But when they're in Vegas, you know what they like to do? A whole bunch of stuff besides watch basketball games.
And regular season basketball games.
Right. So, you know, I enjoy the NBA, but if it was like a Thursday in Las Vegas and you told me I could do 10 different things, one of them being go to the basketball game, it'd probably rank 10th on my list of things I want to do today in Las Vegas. And so, yeah, people love to go to Las Vegas, but do they love to, while in Las Vegas, walk into a basketball arena and watch two teams that, or four teams that they probably don't care about? We got the answer to that. It's no. The answer is no. They didn't want to. So you try to find a place where it'll actually look the way it wants to. You want it to look and feel the way you want it to feel. When you get off the plane in Indianapolis, there's like, at least for the Final Four, there's like that little slogan they have. Like, you know, basketball is basketball everywhere else.
In 49 other states, it's just basketball.
There you go. And so like you take it to a place where they pride themselves on, we care about this more than anybody else cares about this. And then you put it in a place that's smaller. It's about half the size of a typical NBA arena. So you don't have to sell as many tickets. You don't have to get as many people to show up. And you've got the off chance that it could be the Pacers. I mean, you know, probably won't, but could be. And either way, that state, that community will take real pride in just showing up and showing the world how much we love basketball. And also the players, you know what they do, I imagine, when they walk in, you know, the arena out in Vegas, T-Mobile. They walk in and it looks just like every other arena they walk into. They walk into Hinkle. I bet you we're going to see videos of this. There's going to be NBA star, you fill in the blank. He's going to have his phone out inside Hinkle. Yeah. Like, man, this is cool. Like, oh, man. And somebody's going to be like, yeah, we played here when I was a junior. And like, it's going to be an experience for the players. It's going to be a better television product. The same way a regular season baseball game, like we all kind of pay attention and go, man, that looks cool when it's in Field of Dreams because it's just different and it looks cool. This is going to be basketball's version of that. Can't wait.
By the way, the college basketball media did it first. We had pickup games there circa 2010, 2015. Would have had one in 21 if not for the COVID bubble tournament not allowing that to happen. And then our own Josh.
That's his home building.
That's his alma mater. We got some good run-in. Josh actually had himself a nice game. No injuries, which was happy to report. Josh might even have the post-run photo here that we can see. I just like the fact that the NBA saw what was possible after a bunch of hacks just sweated it out relatively early on a Final Four Saturday. That's usually when the media pickup game is done, and they were able to make it happen. That was that's really cool, really inspiring. But we did it first. So and Josh is a better, although I've not yet swung the sticks with Josh. Given, you know, the evidence that you provided on the show, he's a better golfer than he is a hooper, but he was a good hooper. He showed himself very well on that day.
Doctor's kid almost always going to be a better golfer than a hooper.
That's typically how.
I mean, just blindly, you just ask me, I'd be like, hey, so what your dad do for a living? He's a doctor. You get your bag out.
How many players in the NBA right now were the son of a doctor?
I have no idea.
Over under 3.5?
I don't even know. Can you name a son of a doctor?
No, but I just don't know. I don't know the professions of most of the parents of these NBA players. It's just a good question. You know, sometimes we venture into these areas that we don't even expect.
Dr. T. Morant.
If you say so. Here we go.
what if T. Morant was the only doctor who has a son in the NBA? Wouldn't that be a twist?
Yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, here's the post run pickup Final Four. We got a whole crew there. My guy Stephen Hartzell showing up.
Yeah, y'all definitely look like
some gamer, by the way.
If you asked me what is that a picture of, I would say looks like sports writers.
That's a bunch of sports writers. We got and Terrence Oglesby, who has got unlimited range and just T.O. is great. Love
buddy, I never
this
seen
this dude loves showing up at the Final Four media pickup game so he can drop like 37 across three different runs. He just absolutely loves it.
I always imagine what it would be like to be like not awesome enough to play in the NBA, but just awesome enough to destroy everybody else all the time. Would that be fun?
Yeah.
Man, if you said, hey, look, GP, what's that a picture of? I'd say, man, that looks like Sports Writers to me. Only thing missing is like a Springsteen CD.
You see the great Kyle Boone in the middle there. Some of our chat, one of our
strong jaw. Mentioned.
Yeah, strong jaw.
I right say that looks like some sports writers or some golfers. Yeah. That looks like a bunch of golfers decided to play basketball.
Yeah, a lot of CBS in this photo. Cam Salerno, Isaac Trotter, yours truly, Josh, KB. Love to see you. Evan Miyakawa at the end. You see how Miyakawa is dressed like Shire? He didn't play. Look at his get up there. You see that? He brought the Duke long sleeve quarter zip with the whistle and glasses and everything. It was incredible. Okay, a couple more things that we can wrap. This doesn't need to be a segment. Actually, hold on. I saw this in the middle of the show. Let me read this out loud because apparently everyone hates it, but I haven't looked at the details. So the NBA posted this. One free throw rule tested during the upcoming summer leagues. When free throws are awarded, one free throw worth 1, 2, or 3 points will be attempted. Standard free throw rules will apply in the final 2 minutes in fourth quarter and overtime. G League has used this since 2019-20 to improve game flow. So with this rule, any foul that would typically result in 1, 2, or 3 free throws under standard NBA rules will just be a single foul shot attempt in the summer league, not in regular. That attempt will be worth the same total number of points. Okay, so if you're fouled on a three-point attempt,
you get one free throw for three points.
Shot, and if you make it, it's three. And if you miss it, that's the only shot you get.
Well, this sounds goofy. Like, why do they spend time doing stuff like this?
They're doing this to cut down 2 minutes and 59 seconds worth of total free throw time. This is kind of wild, man.
This is like one day I walked in the house and my wife was wallpapering the pantry.
Sure.
And I just sort of looked around the house and I was like, yeah, I don't mind if you wallpaper, but like if we have time to wallpaper, there's so many other things we could be working on than wallpaper in the pantry. And that's what this feels like to me. This feels like your wallpaper in the pantry when we can't still figure out how to put the right hats on people's head. And every minute you spent thinking about this dumb thing is a minute you should have spent thinking about something that actually matters.
Thankfully, it's only for the summer league because this rule has zero business ever being implemented in the games that matter. Imagine you shoot a three-pointer, you're fouled, you get to take one shot for 3 points from the foul line.
Yeah, you know who thought of this rule?
Get out of my face.
You know who came up with this? Darius Washington. Darius Washington was like, I got an idea. What if all you got to do is make the first one?
That's a wild.
His whole life would be different if this rule was in place. 2005 Conference USA tournament.
See if they can use that at the NBA Cup. They just got on the screen. See if they can use that at the NBA Cup at Hinkle. Hopefully not. James Nnaji. You remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Played at Baylor?
Yeah.
Previous draft pick. He's gonna play for George Mason next season. Same color scheme, different uniform, different league. So just
oh man, that's perfect for an ATN tip-off show.
It really is.
Oh buddy, that's a B block.
You got multiple segments taken care of there,
buddy. I didn't know if we was gonna make it after we lost Obi Toppin that one time. But
okay,
we're in business. We're in business again.
Okay, so we won't count this show because we just mentioned him. Over under 3.5 shows next season where we talk about James Nnaji, even in passing, even if it's just one mention, 3.5 shows next season.
I will talk about him on CBS Sports Network 50 times.
Yes, you will. But what about on this show?
Once.
maybe absolutely destroyed. Okay, what if he's like the A-10 player of the year?
Oh, man. I hope so.
Oh, man.
There is nothing more valuable to my career,
I know,
than a prominent ATM player. Well, I need them bad. You don't understand. You don't understand what that C block looks like sometimes.
I know. Oh, I'm aware. I'm very, very aware. All right, that's a Nnaji update. I think that is, from a news perspective, I think that's the majority of what you need to be caught up on. We got to end it on a somber note, if you will. In fact, I hate that it's taken this long to get the show up to talk about this man, but GP, one of the greats in college athletics, unfortunately, is no longer with us. If you want to set it up, we can share some memories of the tremendous Kenny Klein.
Kenny Klein, the longtime sports information director at Louisville, passed away last week at the age of 66. He reportedly had a choking incident at a local restaurant and never regained consciousness. His service was held earlier this week. Rick Pitino spoke at it. It was really sweet. Norlander, we've both known Kenny for a long time. Mm-hmm. My dealings with him literally go back to college.
I love that.
I'm the sports editor of the Daily Helmsman, the University of Memphis campus newspaper. And, you know, Memphis and Louisville were in the same league. And I've covered a Memphis-Louisville game. Kenny Klein would, I've known the man since I was in college. And then my career, you know, put us in the same room a lot. The same restaurant sometimes, the same bar quite a few times.
Yeah.
And just the best, the best at his job and just the best to be around. And I started thinking through it. All sports information directors are not created the same.
They are not.
There are some, whereas I can just make a totally reasonable point in passing. And they want to talk to you about it for 45 minutes on the phone, very offended. There's that person. And then there's Kenny Klein. Think about all the stuff he had to deal with.
That's the thing.
The end of Denny Crum.
Dude.
The Pitino scandals.
Working with Rick Pitino, which is just Rick Pitino. Like Rick Pitino can, there's just a lot that comes with it. You could not have had a person that was better equipped for that. And he was there long before Pitino got to Louisville. And everything is connected to that. And not once, keep going, GP, but not once ever in any negative headline associated with Louisville men's basketball, not once was there a bad encounter, an inappropriate comment, an unwanted email, anything from Kenny Klein. He always, always understood the role of the media and what his role was as the conduit from media to coach to player to institution. Keep going. But as you mentioned that, it just kind of springs to mind where there were a lot of other people that would have not been well equipped to have that job during what was quite literally, GP, over the course of 6, 7, 8 years of just seemingly unending tumult at Louisville.
And I just, you know, I was thinking through this and I was like, not only did I never have a bad interaction with Kenny, I never even anticipated a bad interaction with Kenny, which is not naturally how my mind works. I sit around, write things, say things, and then I'm always like, all right, when I bump into so-and-so, how's that going to go? And then I imagine how it's going to go. And to be clear, it almost never even happens, okay? But I don't ever even remember going through that process with Kenny. And we weren't just talking about, on some level, his boss and his boss's program, but like one of his best friends, like his brother. And it just... I'm not going to say we never took it to a place it shouldn't have gone while discussing Rick or whatever. In fact, I remember having a conversation. Now we're just talking. I remember having a conversation. I had lunch with Richard Pitino one time, long time ago. And it was after, you know, Rick's most famous personal scandal, I guess. Right. And I just sort of had this moment of clarity where I was like, all those little jokes that we got off and on one hand, that's sort of the job, you know, I am who I am. The reason I have a career is because I can make a joke here or there or whatever. And it's a basketball coach and it's easy material. And so everybody had their jokes. And I'm sure I tweeted something or said, and it just sort of had this moment where I was like, I was also talking about if Richard would allow me, because we're similarly aged, to call him a friend. That's my friend's dad. I'm just making jokes about my friend's dad. How would that make me feel if somebody was making jokes about my dad? And I just had this moment, and I think I verbalized this to Richard. I was like, it never occurred to me how I can text you and be like, hey, what's up, blah, 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 and then go tweet a joke about your dad. It doesn't mean that you don't do the job, but I just sort of, and here's my point. I don't ever remember feeling any of that from Kenny, none of it. It was just the same smile, the same thing every time. And then I think most people know He went on to work with Rick at St. John's, and he's just the gold standard. We knew it was a bad situation, and then you're hoping for good news, but so you had plenty of time to thoughts and prayers for Kenny Klein. Keep praying for Kenny Klein. Rest in peace, Kenny Klein. There was times where there was people, you had time to get off multiple thoughts and tweets, and most people did. And by the end of it, I was just like, hey, man, you people are reading. You've read enough about who Kenny Klein was. Just all I can add to it is just let me stamp it and tell you it's true. This is not, sometimes people die and we get all crazy and start talking about them in ways that just aren't true. Like, I remember going to a funeral one time. And they were just standing up there talking about the guy. And it was like, and he was a great father and he was the best brother. And I'm just like, no, he was none of those things. He was not a good father. He was awful. And he was not a good, we're here because we got to be here. But like, we don't have to.
How'd that go over when you got up to the lectern?
I didn't speak at this funeral. I just sat there quietly. But I was like,
let me tell you why this guy actually sucked.
Yeah. Well, I have had this conversation with my wife. Like, do not have people up there lying about me. Just be like, you know what? He did his best. He's a pretty good guy. He did his best.
If there's one thing we knew about the late Gary Parrish, this guy believed in premarital sex.
Yeah. Just tell the truth. He was a big proponent of premarital sex. He did his best. Probably could have taken some more time at home as opposed to work. But you know, he was doing what he thought he needed to do. but don't make me out to be like, and he was father of the year in 2009. No, I wasn't. All right. And so my point with this was like, you're reading all these amazing stories about Kenny Klein.
Yeah.
And all these people are telling you how awesome he was. And I don't really have much to add to it that you hadn't read. But just trust me, if you believe anything I ever tell you, believe this. What you're reading about this guy is true. He really was just as awesome as everybody's telling you. And man, this news is just awful. It's the randomness of life.
It's awful.
This guy, he
left us in his mid 60s and he deserved to clear 100 years and more and a decade or 110, 115. Just tragic. Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, he choked at a dinner. Rick was actually at the dinner with him, with some others, and then he went into a coma. And you know, I was on this text thread with I don't even know how many other people. So we'd get updates, and there were like days where it was positive, and days where it was wait and see, and days where it was positive and wait because he was in a coma, and then he had responses, and then it was a long week and a half of just waiting. And then I think about 2 days before he passed, we got the update that it just seemed like it was at the point of no return, which was not an easy day. I talked to someone who knew him well, and basically this person expressed to me, he's like, these were not his words, but it was basically like, if Kenny Klein is gone the way he's gone, then how do you not question like just any sort of sense of a higher power? Because this dude did not remotely deserve to leave this coil when he did. Just a couple quick ones from me on him. I was at the UConn St. John's game at Hartford this year. Remember, St. John's got destroyed. I was critical of Patino and how he kind of handled the stuff in the post game after. But there was Kenny Klein back there, who, by the way, went to St. John's, one, to help Patino. Patino gave a great speech earlier this week. He said he cried enough to fill the Ohio River. There's a full-time SID at St. John's, Stephen Dombrowski, who also embattled some health issues. And so Kenny Klein, who retired in 2022 from Louisville, okay, and should have had his name in the rafters that afternoon, never really fully left the business, left the industry. He you saw him every year at the Final Four, courtside, running the stats, had done it for four decades, man. It's going to be just so weird not seeing him at the Final Four next year. I still haven't even, let alone accept, I still can't even interpret that. Anyway, the point of all this is that Kenny Klein, although he retired in 2022, he never really stepped away. I haven't covered a Kentucky Derby, but apparently, like, of course, his hometown, he was there helping with the comms, with everything on the Derby front. But here's Kenny, St. John's, Patino suffers like the second worst loss of his career. He gets Patino one to come out and talk, period. It was short. It was all 60 seconds. He gets that to happen. And then there's Zubi Ejiofor off in the corner. He's got a bloody lip. He's getting stitched up. And Patino, understandably, Patino's just, why wouldn't he be pissed off beyond belief with the way that it was their worst game and they rallied and rebounded and they were better after that. But Patino is like done. And Patino can comport himself in that way in part because he knows Kenny Klein is there to take care of the situation if need be during times of quote unquote crisis. And so he gets Zuby. Zuby was awesome. He talked to the media for about 5 minutes in which in the moment is meaningful and significant because this is UConn and it's St. John's. And it's a highly anticipated regular season game with all the context around what it means for both those teams, the Big East race, the chase for a really good seed, all of it, in addition to just the rivalry aspect and Hurley and Patino and all that. And of course, Kenny Klein was there and made everything better. There was a last season, I was actually trying to work through potentially getting an on-cam feature done with Patino that never came to be, because Rick's schedule is just, there's a lot going on. But we really tried, and it was Kenny Klein. I mean, it must have been over the course of 3 months we did this. He was doing everything imaginable to try and make this happen, and ultimately we couldn't get it done. And just above and beyond. And I'm just one person that he dealt with. To anyone listening that doesn't know who this man was, and doesn't quite understand the role of sports information directors and what they do in college athletics, just know that the person who, at least on the basketball side, quite literally would be voted as the number one overall seed, he's no longer with us. It's extremely tragic. I feel so much for his loved ones and his family. The only thing that can come from this that can bring some real positivity and some brightness to their lives is they have been it has been a showering, an unending showering of compliments from so many people about what he meant. So there was no way we were going to do a podcast, the first one after his passing, and not dedicate some real time to honoring him. And actually, Jody Demling, who does a great job, he just signed on with On3 and has covered Louisville for a long time. Kenny Klein created the local show. He thought it up all those years ago, and Jody hosts it. And so he asked some media people to do some audio reflections, and I sent him something in. And I guess he got so many that it literally required two shows to do it. But in that one that I sent, I said, Kenny Klein's name should be in a banner in the rafters of the Yum Center. He was as vital to the University of Louisville, I think, as any person ever associated with the university. And so I do hope they find a way to do that, because he was never not there for anyone who always needed him, and managed to like just be the life of a room. He was a Kentucky guy and was not afraid of his bourbon, and just an awesome presence to be around. Kenny Klein, you are dearly, dearly, and will forever be missed. College athletics will not be the same without you.
Yeah, if you're looking for some more reading, I thought C.L. Brown at the Courier Journal had a terrific piece intertwining it with the passing of his mother, which happened at a similar time. So obviously thoughts with Kenny's family, thoughts with the
Eric Crawford, by the way, also had a really good piece as well.
Yeah. To his work. Just sad stuff. Just sad.
Very
stuff.
Sad. Yep.
Sad stuff. All right. Let's,
that's a show, GP.
Yeah. We'll call it a show. So I don't know really what the plan is. We're doing a
play by ear. I think, you know, we got a 4th of July weekend. The country turns 250 in 2 days, by the way.
Oh man. Doesn't look a day. It doesn't look that old, does it?
It doesn't. No, nah. It doesn't. What was you were kicking around back then? You were what, like fourth grade when they had the 200, the bicentennial, as they called it? What was that like?
I remember being fun, fireworks and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good time. It's a good time.
Strait of Hormuz was open, right?
Man, it was.
I think it was wide open back then.
I mean, the most
maybe open. I don't know.
It was the most open. It was just, man, you wouldn't believe how it just ships everywhere, just going in and out of that thing. You know, you look up 50 years later and a little tougher.
Is that going to be is that going to be our 250th birthday present here? They're going to open the strait on Saturday?
I don't think so. I haven't heard that. But you never.
Should create a website. You know, it's like, did Duke win? And you just put is the Strait of Hormuz open.com.
And I Google it all the time just to check on it. I check on it about once a day.
I mean, here we go. It's a gradual reopening.
Yeah.
apparently it's a gradual one. So
yeah, I think
4 hours ago With Hormuz reopened, has the oil shortage turned into a glut?
What do you think? Our oil shortage.
The Strait of Hormuz is reopening faster than expected after the U.S. and Iran signed a memorandum of understanding and launched its indirect talks in Qatar to discuss the flow of shipping.
Well, that's quite the presumption. That's quite the presumption. Opening faster than expected. Yeah, they don't know what I expected.
We're getting there.
I did not expect it to ever be closed. All right. I didn't even know it existed. I didn't even know it was a thing.
Most of us didn't know it was a thing.
Who knew that there was this whole important strait over there? Like, who even knew?
Well, I generally had an understanding that a significant amount of the world's oil came from the Middle East. And so there were passageways and...
I thought it all came from land, I thought all the oil came from land.
Texas, man. Wyoming, the Dakotas.
Yes. I thought Billy Bob Thornton was in charge of all the oil and everything was fine. Turns out Billy Bob is not nearly as important in the oil industry as he presents himself. I thought Billy I thought Billy Bob was in charge of the oil. It turns out it's actually some other people. Hormuz. It's wild, man. I've learned a lot this year. This has been an educational year for me.
We can get out of here, but I'm just looking. Is Taylor Swift really getting married at the Garden this weekend? Is that
Tomorrow night. You think she's going to ride in that big elevator that we all get to ride in? I love that elevator.
Come on, man. Why can't
The big cargo elevator.
Cargo elevator. Yeah. The freight elevator.
Yeah, they need it for elephants. That's what I was remember hearing one time.
Correct. It's a big ass elevator, that's for sure.
Man.
It'd be phenomenal if she did that.
With an elephant, if she rode it with an elephant. It'd be phenomenal if it was her and
I'd
Travis
like to
and
see
elephant.
Some sort of acknowledgement of Kemba's crossover on Gary McGee. I mean, I understand the Knicks just won the title and that came with it. Like game four is an all-timer. But there's some big-time college basketball moments over the decades I'd like to see acknowledged.
Did you see what TMZ reported? The Knicks starting lineup got invited.
The entire Knicks starting lineup was invited to Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
OJ Anunoby's going to Taylor Swift's wedding. That's just sort of funny to me.
Do you think he's actually going?
I don't think he'll remember it.
Why?
I think he'll be there.
We need to wrap the show. I got stuff to do. Why the Garden? I don't understand. Why get married at MSG?
Because you can.
I guess. I don't get that. Just go to Watch Hill, Rhode Island, where everyone thought it was going to be, and maybe she's literally too big of a star for that community.
I mean, I did some reading. Here's what I read. They had a place secured in Rhode Island, and it leaked. And when it leaked, they canceled the whole thing. They basically said, if this leaks, we're done. And it leaked, and they said, we're done. That's what I read. I think that was page six.
Everything in page six is accurate, so.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
All right, that's really a show now.
All right, yeah, I got to go. Yeah, I got to go. All right. Shouts to Devin Downey.
We'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you when we talk to you. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Terry Teagle, he's a legend. Hook, Larnell, Hormuz.
Damn it.
If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts like Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. Taylor?
Definitely in us. I'm in.
Definitely in us. I mean, definitely. Travis, definitely in us.
Yeah. Whole lot of us is hopping.
Whole lot of us is going to be in Midtown Manhattan this weekend celebrating premarital sex. And then I assume postmarital sex.
Consummation, of course.
I assume they're going to knock out both this weekend.
Both in the Garden?
Could you have premarital sex and postmarital sex in the Garden on the same night?
I mean, you could. Who's to say you can't? I'm sure there are people that are out there that have at something. Conceivably.
Who do you think? Stevie Nicks, probably.
Isn't she performing?
Let's maybe.
Get the hell out of here.
Okay. All right. We got to go. All right. Everybody have a good time. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Podcasts.